Very.
Well, I'm glad to be here. This is one meeting that I always really look forward to. It's one of our more relaxed meetings up until this year. And I have to be very frank with you this morning. I have come to this meeting with anxiety. I don't have much to live up to, though. I'm not a preacher, so, you know, I don't have that problem. I'm not needing return calls. So that's not necessary. Becky Weaver last night, and there are many of you in the room I know that love me, and I feel that love, not just today, but from year to year. But she said, "Sister Newbern, you don't have to do good. We're going to love you anyway." So, anyway, here I am. No, seriously, I think this is a wonderful time. When we come together, just ministers, ministers' wives, and like Rosie said, many of you here this morning are ministers, and you could do a much more beautiful job. But you know what? They ask me, and I have a fear in my heart. I never say no. I don't know. I just can't say no. I was about to say no, and Armin was out of state one of the few times that I don't go with him, and I went to church with Brent and Lisa, and I'm glad Lisa's here with us too. And Linda Stamps was speaking that morning, and she is such a dear lady, and she has just dedicated herself so faithfully to carrying on the ministry that Don had. And when I left that service this morning, I told her, I said, "Linda, I wish I hadn't come today." I said, "I was just about to say no to this minister's wife meeting," and I said, "I just can't now. You really touched my heart." And I thought, if she can do it, and she goes all over the world, the Lord is really using her. So you will want to hear her in July. She's a special lady, but all of you are special. And Rosie, I have to say up front, we thank you for the work you're doing, and all of your ladies. And thank you for extending this opportunity to me, really. When Rosie told me that she and the ladies had asked me to speak, I thought, well, I'll do the best that I can. I am not a public speaker, and like I told you earlier, I struggle with nervousness. I really do. I'll be frank and honest with you, but I hope today that I can share something with you that will be beneficial to us all. The ministry is not new to me. I was born into it. I had a wonderful set of parents who were in the ministry, and I have very fond memories of growing up in a preacher's home. I never did have the feeling that I was sorry I was a preacher's kid. I've loved it from the beginning and enjoyed it. Then I married into the ministry, and when I got married into the ministry, we just didn't know anything to do but just to go into it full-fledged. And so that's been our life. From all of my life, I can literally say I've spent it in the ministry. And although I've spent the ministry in all my life in the ministry, I will have to tell you, I don't have all the answers, because there are things that come along even today that stagger me, and I have to call on the Lord for help. And there are many times of bewilderments and hurts that I have to wade through for myself. My husband can't do it, not another person can do it, and I know that you have been there too. So anyway, I want to just try to talk to you today from my heart to your heart. And I, when I began to prepare for this assignment, I looked into the Bible for something regarding ministers' wives. And to just be frank with you, ladies, there's not a whole lot in the Bible about us. You know, I think we're more or less on our own. So I thought, well, what can I talk about? And I just came up, maybe for lack of a better word, I'm going to talk to you about coping. And I looked in the dictionary for the meaning of the word cope, and it means to contend with, to deal with, and to meet on equal terms. And I thought, I think that's what I'm looking for. So that's the title of my little talk to you this morning, is coping. And the first thing that I'm going to mention is just simply coping with the ministry. I've been a minister's wife for 40 years, and I would like to think that I've been in and out of most of the areas of concern during this time, and I would really love to think that I've grown emotionally and spiritually from these experiences, Many of them were very painful at the time that I was going through them, but God was faithful. And the call into the ministry is a mixed blessing. Being where God wants us to be is a great feeling, but getting there and staying there can sometimes be the real hassle. So, welcome to the title of Minister's Wives. It's a part of your identity now and always. So, purpose today to make the best of it, girls. If you haven't already done that, many of you have already, you're at my age and some are a little older, and we have purpose to make the best of it, but maybe some of you younger girls that are starting, just enjoy it. You know, the sooner we reckon with the call of God and we realize that we're in this ministry together with our husbands, the happier we will be. So let's not make it a yoke. Let's enjoy it. Let me encourage you to develop a supportive attitude toward your husband's work and joyfully accept the fact that you've been chosen to minister because you're in this with him. It's also imperative that we present a united partnership by exhibiting a delightful relationship with our husband. And I hope you don't have to work at this too hard. All of us have to deal with expectations, and at times we place a lot of pressure on ourselves by feeling that we have to be all things to all people, and this just can't be. And I had to come to terms with that early on in our ministry. So I decided that I had to make a realistic assessment of myself and just realize I had to do what I was capable of doing and then what God wanted me to do. And when we do that and we live within that sphere, I think God's going to help us to handle these situations. Most of us can identify with a story I read a few weeks back about a minister's wife, and I've named her Joan. Let me read what she wrote. "This week has been the pits," Joan muttered as she settled Jeremy in his car seat for another trip to the church. "Getting this family on the road is like a circus." Earlier, her husband Todd had raced to the men's pancake supper, leaving Joan to round up the kids. And that was no small chore. Mark, their oldest, had been really reluctant. He didn't want to leave his soccer game early. And 5-year-old Annie had refused to have her hair brushed. And Joan thought, "I'm just too tired to even fool with it, so we won't brush her hair." So only baby Jeremy seemed content, but even he had fussed all week because of the extra night meetings they had had. Budget planning, a guest missionary speaker, the Youth Awards banquet, and a church growth rally all landed in 1 week on top of her turn to work in the community clothes closet. "All I need," thought Joan, "is a broken leg and the week will be perfect." Oh, I think we've all can identify with Joan, don't you? If I ask you to make a list of demands that place a drain on you, I think all of us in this room would basically come up with close to the same list. But let me give you the list that I made. Time pressure, lack of privacy, church conflict, fear of being voted out, fear of having your reputation and your future ministry damaged by a few gossips, financial strain, loneliness, and feeling that you can't talk to anyone who would understand and who would keep your confidence. Well, yes, such pressures do go with a ministry because few, if any other occupations, call for such commitment from the wife as does the ministry. Let me show you by comparison. Who cares if a lawyer's wife knows anything about law? Or who cares if a doctor's wife knows anything about medicine? Who keeps track of how regularly the coach's wife attends pep rallies, games, and booster club meetings? You get the picture? We got to be at church, though, girls. They'll count. Some of us here this morning received, quote, calls into the ministry. However, many of us did not. Brother Jim McNabb was preaching at the sectional council in January in Oklahoma City, and he mentioned a story about his wife, Linda. And so I asked if I could repeat that today, and I told him, I said, well, I won't go into depth. I'll try to be brief about it. But he said that Linda, in their earlier years, had struggled because some ladies around her had felt a call into the ministry, and she'd never really felt a, quote, call into the ministry. So he said she kind of struggled with that, but after one day of service, she came in and she said, "You know, Jim, through the years I've struggled because I didn't feel a call, but," she said, "this morning I volunteered." So many of us are like Linda. We have volunteered to be in the work of the Lord. I tell you what, there's no doubt about it. We're in it full-fledged, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. I'm going to talk to you for a little while about coping with family pressures. Parents in the ministry face all of the challenges that most parents encounter, plus family life for the minister's family has a way of getting deeply entwined with church activity. And sometimes the line between ministry goals and family goals can become blurred. But I want you to hear me right here. We cannot afford to accomplish our ministry goals at the expense of destroying our family goals. And so you say, what do? Well, we just have to, by God's help, find a way to balance family needs against ministry needs. And balancing home and ministry needs just has to be something that you have to come to in your own life with regard to help from the Lord. Ask Him to help you. But I fully believe, girls, that if we tend to family needs with love and integrity and with the help of the Lord, the family will not begrudge our time that we spend on ministry needs. So remember that this morning. They have to balance. You don't want to forget family needs. And you also have to manage your time, or you'll continually feel behind schedule. You'll feel overworked. You'll feel cheated, and you'll feel just plain worn out. So, you know, when we were pastoring, I just would get up, or maybe the night before I went to bed, I made a list of the things that I had to do the next day, because many times, if I didn't do that, I found myself repeating or going to a place I'd already been, backtracking. So just, you know, try to work you out a schedule. Your responsibilities are so many, but first and foremost, and I don't have to tell you this, but the first and foremost is, the most important is to be a wife. And the second is to be a mother. And I tell you what, these are two of the most important areas, and you do not want to fail in these areas at all. But on top of these, you're also a secretary, you're a sounding board, you're a counselor, your interpreter, maybe for your husband's sermons, your defender, your friend, your seamstress, your cook, taxi driver, coach, teacher, and housekeeper. Go tell your husband you're worth more than he's paying you. No, seriously, girls, take good care of your husbands. Remember that our husbands are not perfect, but neither are we. So look for opportunities to commend him and to compliment him. Often he has no one but you. And another thing, I think if any person in the world should pray for their husbands, it should be us. And ladies who are here today and widowed, they would tell us to be supportive in every way to our husbands, enjoy every minute that we have with them, because I'm sure we don't even realize it until we would lose one. So I have a few things that I want to just maybe drop to you about supporting your husband. Take an interest in his world. Don't allow yourself to be used, but do be supportive in what is important to him. Never try to be his conscience, and never play the game, the blame game. That won't work, girls. Consider ways in which you can build your husband's image with your parishioners. That never bothered me at all. I was happy to be a booster of my husband. Tell your husband that you trust and respect him, and be specific. Promise yourself that you will make a conscious effort to never criticize him in front of others. Respect his masculinity by not becoming competitive or argumentative in the presence of others. Show by gestures that you genuinely respect him and enjoy the companionship that you share. And as I told you a while ago, I hope you don't have to work at that. Do not seek to become the dominant person in the relationship or leave the impression with people that you are the authority figure in the home. And give him to God every day. Let God make him holy, and you make him happy. So I encourage you again, be happy with your role as a minister's wife. Accept yourself at the age you are and at the place you are, and anticipate the good things that are yet yours rather than regret what might have been if you had not been married to a preacher. Before I close this morning, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about coping with criticism. You know, none of us really enjoy being criticized, but all of us face it at some point in our ministry. But you know, it might be beneficial to ask ourselves in a quiet moment, was it justified? Did I deserve it? An honest answer in our own spirit might help us in the future. However, don't take every negative word as a personal threat, because people often speak without thinking. You probably have one or two of those in your church. Most of us always did. And I'm going to leave my notes here a minute. I was going to try to stick with my notes because we're all rushed because we're going to the funeral later. But early in our ministry, in one of our churches, we had the little ladies groups that quilted. And they wanted me to learn to quilt. Well, I tried, but I could never get my stitches small enough. And I stuck my fingers, and to be frank with you, I just didn't like it. So I never learned to quilt. But one little lady who had been so insistent always, she said, we'll make sure that's a qualification of our next pastor's wife. Oh, we've all had them, haven't we? So let's just shrug off the barb, girls. Sift what we hear and exert a little professional toughness and get on with the ministry and the life that God approves. You know, if we turn it over to Him, we can look back on them like I haven't laughed at it. At the time, it was a little, you know, but I still didn't learn to quilt. I know that many of you came here this morning with disappointments and hurts, and you're asking yourself, is the ministry really worth it? Oh, yes, it is really worth it. I wouldn't exchange it for anything. God has been faithful, and He's brought us through many difficult situations, and there will probably be some more to come, but I know that we can handle it with God's help. The Apostle Paul cannot be accused of having it easy as a minister of the gospel, yet he could find the grace to write. God in His mercy has given us this work to do, and so we do not become discouraged. We put aside all secret and shameful deeds. We do not act with deceit, nor do we falsify the word of God. In the full light of truth, we live in God's sight and try to commend ourselves to everyone's good conscience. We are often troubled, but not crushed. Sometimes in doubt, but never in despair. There are many enemies, but we are never without a friend. And though badly hurt at times, we are not destroyed. At all times, we carry in our mortal bodies the death of Jesus, so that His life also may be seen in our bodies. That is 2 Corinthians 4, 1 and 2, 8 and 10. And I read that from the Good News Bible. So ladies, remember God created you. He loves you. I love you. There are other ministers' wives all across this congregation that love you. So just always remember that in a hard trial that you're going through. And also remember that God doesn't love us any less when we face problems too big for us. We all have struggles. I've often said that struggles are the stuff of life. I have mine. What are yours? They're all different. We all have discouragements and feelings of depression. You know, and there are times of loneliness, and it's not because we don't have people all around us, but we are lonely. We're just lonely. But I like the chorus, our God specializes in things thought impossible, and He will do for us what no other power can do. So a little bit later this morning, we're going to go to prayer, but right now I want you to stand and sing a chorus with me. I will serve
worthy, because I love thee. You have given life to me. I was nothing before you found me. You have given life to me. Died on Calvary, your touch is what I long for. You have given life to me. To me,
Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. Ladies, I want to tell you today that God is our resource. You have to go to the real source when you have a true need in your life. I've been at wit's end and hurting many times and lonely, and my husband and my family have stood faithfully with me, but above and beyond their help, I needed a help that they even couldn't give me. And I had to go for myself to the real source. And I want you to not forget today that God is our resource. He has enough. He's enough for whatever we have a need of today. And I tell you what, I know many of us are hurting here today. And the room is crowded. If you want to move to someone, if you want to go to your a close friend or a presbyter's wife, or if you just want to take the person's hand next to you, I want us to pray together this morning, and I haven't said all this for nothing. I want us to touch God this morning, and I know there are many hurting people here today, and I want us to leave having felt a touch from God, because as Armin says very often, his touch and his presence makes the difference, and that's the way we face the future, girls, with the touch of God on our lives. Let's pray. Jesus.